Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's November 20th, 2015. You're listening to the best poker cast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Hey, we had a pretty good cruise.
We had a great cruise. Had a lot of fun and happy to be back. And I know the people that are most happy that we're back are our listeners.
Yes.
Because I don't have to deal with Faso's terrible audio, my lack of counting and not knowing how many shows to do. And, of course, that normally phone-it-in short cruise show we do. So we're back doing our normal show for 1 week only. Then I'm back on the plane on Monday.
But you sound clear. That's the best part.
Well, you know, I have been at sea for 18 nights, so.
You know, we did this show and had Faso on the show. And for the first, like, 8 minutes of the show, it was nice and clear. And then all of a sudden I start hearing static. And I'm like, or maybe I'm just hearing it. You know, maybe it's not going to be recorded that way. So I stopped. I'm like, midway through the show, and I said, all right, hold on, let me check it. And then, yeah, it was bad. So I started over, recorded again, but the second half of the show, he had to go to work soon. Or there's just no way we're... So I just said, all right, we'll just muddle through it, and you can still hear what he's saying and everything, but, you know, that's what happens when you do it on Skype. You know, sometimes that happens.
It's no Coco K cruise passenger roundtable show.
That was awesome. The wind. The wind!
Well, hey, I'm excited that I'm back now. We had a lot of stuff to catch up on that happened while we were gone, and I've got a lot of pretty strong opinions this week. So, I think it's going to be a fun show, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners will have strong opinions to fling right back in my face like monkey feces.
What if I agree with you, though? Then, you know, then it's...
Well, you might agree with me, you might not, but I'm sure there's some of our listeners that are going to disagree with me. So, I mean, here's the thing is that I've had... entire week to think about some of the stuff, so now I've like really formulated thoughts, whereas normally we're just like flying off the cuff, right?
Right.
So we'll get to that in a minute, but I just want to remind y'all, as I mentioned, I'm on a plane on Monday going out to the Ante Up NorCal Classic Ante Up Poker Tour event. It actually starts before I get out there. It runs November 21st through 29th, so tomorrow or today or whatever it is that you're listening, it will kick off. That is at our favorite place out in California, Thunder Valley Casino Resort, just north of Sacramento, California. 12 events, including the $1,100 buy-in main event. And you win that, your ugly mug is going to be on the cover of our magazine. And so for more information on that, visit anteupmagazine.com/Thunder Valley. And be sure to come out and say hi to me. Right now I'm planning to play at least 4 events. And depending on how poorly I play in those, I might have time to play 5 or 6. So, but definitely I'll be in both the Omaha events and the horse event. Looking forward to it. Always have fun out there. And already talking to some folks that are going to be out there and looking forward to catch up. So always fun time out there. So if you're anywhere near the Sacramento area, come by and play some good poker and say hi.
Please go out there and knock Scott out of every tournament. I want to see him play in 9 events.
9 events.
If it's possible, I want it to happen.
It is probably possible, but let's hope it doesn't happen. All right, well, we're gone. Obviously, we crowned a new world champion. And the funny thing was, this was going on while we were on the cruise ship, right?
Right.
And folks that haven't joined us on the cruise before or been on a cruise before, you know, they don't get the whole DirecTV 400 channel package on the ship, right?
Right.
Because they're out at sea.
Right.
So you get what you get, right? So I think one of the funniest days was people up there complaining, hey, can you turn on the Alabama-Florida game or whatever? Like, you know, like they had the DirecTV remote there on the ship. You know, like,
yeah.
You're going to get what you get, right?
Yeah.
So what was interesting, though, and then we got lucky that we actually got a good connection down in the poker room, so we had football on the entire time, which is great for our players. Unfortunately, on the other sports channel that we got on the ship, the World Series was going on.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we only got one channel in the poker room, and that was football, so we had to watch football instead of poker. So we lost some folks up to the pub, which I always call the Pig and Tickle, to watch it. So I actually didn't get to watch very much of this. I watched a little bit when I was up there having a drink in between poker hands. But Joe McKeon, 24-year-old poker pro from Pennsylvania, is our new world champion, outlasting another young gun, 25-year-old Joshua Beckley. And, of course, McKeon led wire-to-wire at the final table, and he knocked out six of the players. Of course, that's all easy to do when you have a huge stack.
But, yeah.
And he previously knocked out Daniel Negreanu in 11th place to get to the November 9. And then 61-year-old amateur Neil Blumenfield, well, I was rooting for because both he's old and an amateur, just like me.
Yep.
Finished third. So I don't know how much you got to watch or what do you think about this, but what do we got to talk about Champion Joe here?
Well, it's probably the most dominating performance I didn't get to see all of it either because I was playing on the ship and it was on the screen behind me. It was really bizarre when you're playing and everyone wants to watch, like, oh, it's a big hand, it's a big hand. And you're trying to play poker and you're like,
that's right.
Hey, action's on you.
In the poker room, like, late at night, right? They switched over at some point, so yeah.
Yeah, it was on the poker room every night, but, you know, only after the football games ended or whatever was on before it. And some people were like, the first night that it was on, people were, you know, is it going to be on? You got to put it on. I said, you do realize it's the November 9, right? And it's going to be on until like 2 in the morning, 6 in the morning or whatever. You know, you're not, if you miss the first 20 minutes, you're going to be okay. So we did get it on somehow, and we were lucky that feed, you know, came in. But people were comparing it a lot to Jamie Gold.
Right.
You know, and the fact that the dominance of it. But I think Jamie's wasn't as dominant as this. I think he...
Really? Okay.
I think that McKeon... really just it didn't never really sweated anything. There was a moment there where Gold, if he gets that call with the flush draw versus the top and the other guy with another draw, there he's sweating it. He had Cunningham at the table, you know, he's sweating that final table. This final table, I don't think McKeon was really ever in any danger at all. He had so many chips going in, and then he just kept building on it and knocking people out. And it was like, it was just pure, you know, it was a beautiful thing to watch when I did get to see it. I didn't see it all, but he was just in command the whole time. It's just pretty bizarre how, you know, you look at it and you say, oh, double up twice and he's back with him. But it just didn't happen.
Yeah.
It just didn't happen. And not that it was anticlimactic, because it's still playing for $8 million on top practically.
Right.
You know, and I don't care if it's, you know, fold, you know, raise and take it. Doesn't matter. You're still playing for a ton of money, so it's exciting that way. It was funny when I was playing, and it was on behind me the second night when it was no, I guess it was still the first night because it was three handed the last night. So maybe it was the second night. I'm not sure, but anyway, every time I turned around, it was like queens versus kings, or I was like, are we sure this is live, or is this like the edited version we used to see back in the day? Because every time I turned around, it was big hand versus big hand, or big flop versus big flop, and it was pretty crazy for a while there. I really don't have much of an opinion on it. I was very happy to see the 61-year-old at least finish third.
Yeah,
that was really a good story. It would have been a great story if he somehow pulled it off.
He just got laid off from his job, too, if I remember correctly.
I think that was him, yeah.
He was trying to decide whether to play or not. I'm like, that's pretty ballsy. I don't care how much money you make. You get laid off from your job and still decide to plunk $10,000 down to play in a tournament that you are a long shot to even cash in.
Yeah.
So I give him credit for that. That would have been a great story. So, you know, I haven't watched too much of Joe. He seems like a nice guy. Certainly doesn't seem like he's going to be a jerk at all. He's going to be a nice guy. But I also haven't seen much to make me think that he's going to be this kind of poker advocate champion that some of us always like the world champion to be. Not everybody does, but I kind of like it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Did you get that sense from him or not?
I think he's pretty easygoing. I don't know. It's hard. It's really hard to say. You don't really learn a lot from the way people play, you know. I didn't see a lot of the interviews either. I mean, I know we're publishers of a magazine and stuff for poker, and, you know, in the old days, I think we paid a little more attention to stuff like this. Now it's so hyper-local that it's harder for us to really dive in and have the time to learn about these people. I mean, honestly, when we first started playing poker together, you could have named every world champion from 98 on. And now... can you name the last five?
I could probably name one.
That's what I'm saying.
Joe McKeon.
So it's hard for me to really dive into the personalities of the people and to see. I mean, I guess you could get a feeling of him.
People make themselves known and remembered, right?
I guess, but like I said, I think you can't remember any of the last five.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is I don't know if any of the last five actually made themselves known. And obviously, you win the tournament and you're the world champion, so that's an accomplishment in itself. But what you do with it after that and whether people remember you the next year after there's a new champion is kind of dependent on what you do during your quote-unquote reign, isn't it?
I guess.
If you get somebody out there that just becomes a huge personality that's front and center, is advocating for online poker or poker whatever, or picks up a charity thing and just goes crazy with a charity, or gets cast on a TV show. I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you're saying.
Ways, but it's really up to you to do that. I think just becoming world champion isn't enough to keep you in the conversation.
No, I agree with that 100%. I don't think that just because you won, you're going to be this legend or whatever. I know the term world champion sticks with you for the rest of your life, but I also think our ability to remember who won the last one and to think that they were a good champion directly correlates with the passion we had for following that back in the day. I think when everybody in the world was into poker and there were online poker was going, so everyone was playing and it was on TV everywhere and there was sponsorship money everywhere. We had guys that didn't even know how to play poker walk up to me at the Times when we were still doing the show and be like, "Did you see the World Series last night? And it's going to be that Hashem guy, oi, oi, oi," and all that crap. And I'm like,
But that was a different era. That's back when.
That's what I'm saying. So
poker was at that big peak, right, where everybody's talking about it, and you could get by just being the poker champion and having people know you. You know, now that day's passed now, so to really be somebody that's remembered, and I'm not saying that people want to be remembered, you can do what you want to. I mean, you got $8 million. You can go into oblivion if you want.
That's right.
And still have a better life than I'm going to have, right? But if you want to be remembered now, I think it's a lot harder. I think you actually have to have a strategy. You have to stake yourself out and say, hey, this is what I'm going to do so people remember me after next year's 24-year-old wins and takes the title. So, but I'll be curious to see whether Joe is going to do that. My sense is what your sense is, that he seems like a really nice guy. Love to have a beer with him. He's going to continue to play poker and do well. But it doesn't seem to me like he's going to be that kind of guy that just, is the new face of poker for us.
Yeah, no.
Or wants to be honest.
And the other thing, too, is I wonder if a lot of that has to do with age. I mean, a lot of the guys who are winning now are young, and they've got – they're young. They've got things. They have better things to do with their lives than to go around and be a spokesperson for a game. They've got, especially then they come into all that money too. Back in the day, you came into like $1 million when you won, or $2 million or something. But then, then you're like, okay, well now I want to ride this fame and continue to make more money. Now you got $8 million, you're happy.
Yeah.
You don't need to work for that money anymore. So I don't know. Right. It could be a lot of contributing factors, but I think the popularity is the key. That the fact that the game is not as popular as it used to be is people aren't clamoring to find out about this guy. He's not a household name anymore. Greg Raymer, Fossil Man, that was a household name back then because everyone in the household was talking poker. Now it's, hey, we all love poker because we're in the business, but the people who are fringe, they don't know who Joe McKeon never will either. They never will know who he is.
My point is they could if he wanted to.
Yeah, he probably could. I don't know if he could, though. I just don't know if he could make him. Although if he had that freaking bracelet on all the time, that thing was huge. Did you see that? It's like a cell phone on his arm. It was massive.
It's the symbol of our sport, right?
Yeah.
But it's also something that obviously if I won one, trust me, I'm going to be blinging that thing around at the table all day long, right? But I'm not going to be happy about it. It's just a funny thing to be the pinnacle of our sport, right?
Yeah.
A bracelet.
Yeah. It's like the belt in wrestling. I mean, it's just so big and gaudy.
Yeah, exactly.
It's amazing, though. I mean, that thing's heavy.
Yeah, I'm sure Ronda Rousey would like to have a belt back.
Yeah, that's true.
right before the World Series took place, they inducted two new people into the Poker Hall of Fame. Jennifer Harmon and John Juwanda became the 49th and 50th members of the Poker Hall of Fame, voted in by a panel of current members and media from a finalist group of 10. Now, obviously, we talked about our problems with the voting and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But I think we both agreed back then that these two certainly deserve to be in, whether this year or not. So I don't think either one of us are disappointed, right?
No, not at all. We even wrote about it in our magazine, this issue, about, you know, Jennifer Harmon having a soft spot, you know, in our heart for her. And it was just, you know, they're definitely deserving of it. I mean, she's got two regular bracelets, not just, you know, ladies' events. I mean, it's open events, and she crushes the biggest games in the world, Crash Games. And Joanna's got five bracelets and $16.5 million in winnings. Yeah. Clearly, they deserve to be in the Hall. And most of the guys do anyway, and they'll all get in eventually. But finally, to get Jennifer Harmon in is, I think, a nod to, you know, hey, these ladies are deserving. They're women, but that doesn't mean anything. They're great players. It doesn't have to be a woman. So let's put them in when they deserve it, and she deserves it.
Well, and to be devil's advocates to the argument that we had that they're, you know, if you're qualified, you should be in. They shouldn't just limit the two. I did think it's kind of cool that of the millions of poker players in the United States, or actually the world, more than millions, right?
Yeah.
There are only 50 people in the Hall of Fame. So yeah. It really is the biggest honor I think you probably can get, right?
Sure, so, absolutely.
So there is something to say to that. I was a little disappointed, I will say, in some of the comments on our Anti-Up group discussion on PokerRadius.com over Jennifer being inducted. And, you know, I think somebody said, oh, she's just a stay-at-home mom, was one of them. There was that, you know, she doesn't have any real accomplishments in the poker world, which is another one. So I think both of those are really way off base. Am I wrong?
No, not at all. And even so, the other thing too is, even if some of the more important things in life have caught up with her because she's raising twins or whatever it is and married, and that doesn't mean that it discounts what she had done in the past, what she did for the sport, or however you want to term poker, the game. And no way. I mean, she's made World Poker Tour final tables, she's won bracelets, she's won tournaments, and she's crushed the biggest game in the world, played the biggest game in the world, wrote a chapter in Super System 2 because the most decorated, greatest poker player in the world said she was the best person to do it. This woman deserves it, and to say that she's a stay-at-home mom or whatever and that she doesn't deserve it is just way off base, not even close to being reality.
Yeah, I think part of the problem is what we kind of discussed back when we were talking about the finalists, too, is that tournaments are much easier to quantify than cash games, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, it's hard to figure out ROI because you don't know really who enters tournaments and how much they enter. But you've got that billboard, right? So John DeWanna is $17 million in tournament winnings. Impressive, right?
Yep.
Nobody else in that group had anything close to that, I think, if I remember correctly. Jennifer Harmon, like, less than $3 million, I think, right?
Yeah, so, that's right. It's around three. Right.
So, but that discounts the fact that she's been sitting in the big game at the Bellagio forever.
Yeah.
And survived it. Now, we don't know what happens in there. We don't know how much she wins and how much she loses. But if you're a losing player, you're not in that game as long as she's been in that game, right?
Absolutely.
So obviously, she must be doing all right in it, right?
It's not like she has Marco feeding her money or something. I mean, exactly. She's the breadwinner in that family. You know,
so I have a problem with people that don't. They're so superficial, like, oh, how many bracelets do you have? How many rings do you have? How much tournament money do you have? That's just one aspect of poker, and you can't quantify the other one, so it's easy for people to dismiss. But I need to remind people, you can't dismiss that. There's some fantastic cash game players out there that really don't see any reason to play tournaments anymore. You know, they're gonna make more money playing cash, and the endorsements have dried up and everything. So, you know, why even worry about it, right?
Absolutely. Here's the reality check for you. Go up to a poker pro who plays in that game, or plays somebody you respect from, you know, the old days or whatever. Go up to him and say, so what's more important, tournament or cash games? Who's the better poker player, a better cash game player or a better tournament player? They will laugh at you if you think it's a tournament player.
Oh, certainly in a big game, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, there's people don't play tournaments. Back then, I mean, people, they won tournaments in the World Series. They wanted the tournaments to come because they wanted to play the cash games. They didn't want the tournaments. If Doyle Brunson stayed and played all the tournaments that they play now, back in the day, he'd have 30 bracelets.
Yeah, right.
Think about that for a minute. He never played the tournaments for like 15 years. He stopped playing. He just waited for the cash games. Tournaments meant nothing. Now they're big because they're on TV. But to be a real poker player, you got to be able to know that you're mortgage payment is being shoved in on a bluff, not some payment you paid 3 days ago, one-time fee, and you're playing a game of shove my stack in. It's a totally different game. Yeah. And if you succeed at the highest level of cash games, to me, it's a lot more respectful than succeeding at the highest level of tournaments. It just is. There's no doubt in my mind.
And then the stay at home, comment really kind of got in my craw there. You know, I don't think that poker players have to be 100% poker players their entire lives to be worthy of the Hall of Fame.
Right.
I like to see poker players that have a life outside the game or do other things outside the game. And, I mean, she's had a great career, and then at some point she decided she wanted to be a mom. So they adopted, and now she's a mom. And I think we should give her credit for wanting to stay home with and raise the kids, right?
Right.
And it's not that she has quit playing poker. She still plays poker. And obviously she's very passionate about animals and animal groups and still does a lot of charity work for that too. So I think it's really well-rounded. You know, it's interesting. I know you're not on Facebook, so you don't really always understand this, but I've got a lot of our listeners that have friended me on Facebook. And from time to time, I'll get comments from them like, you know, you don't really post about poker a lot, Scott. And I'm like, you know, I'm not going to. It's my vocation. It's a huge hobby of mine, but it's not my life. I got so many other interests, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Music and sports and traveling and beer and all kinds of other things. I want my Facebook to reflect me, not just one part of me. And it's interesting because I also get friend requests from lots of poker pros or people that semi-pros. And you know, I'll give them a week or two in my feed to kind of see what they write about. And a lot of them I end up unfollowing because every post is, so I was under the gun with pocket queens and raised 2.5x and, or, hey, bagged and tagged 250,000, see you tomorrow. And that's great, but it's really boring to me if that's all you are.
Yeah.
So I give her a lot of credit for not being just a poker player. I give her credit for being a human being, too. And I think that's good for our game, that we have people that can be really good at the game, but also do other things. And
one other thing I thought I'd bring up is think about other Halls of Fame. Why are they in the Hall of Fame? Because they had a great career and they're done playing. Now you're saying that she has to keep playing to be in the Hall?
Great comment, yep.
Right? I mean, why does she have to keep playing to be in the Hall? She's proved herself. She's won bracelets. She's and crushed the biggest cash game in, or not crushed it, but played in it. I don't know how she does in it, but she's in it every day, like you said. There's no way you're still in that game if you're not beating it. She's written what would I consider the best limit chapter ever, next to maybe Lee Jones. His book is incredible, but this is for bigger players. I mean, really, what else does she have to do to be in your hall? Just keep playing till she's dead? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. And this is a woman who almost was dead. And needed a kidney transplant, right. Had another chance at life, and you wanted to waste it at a table and spending all her money in a tournament when she could raise children and do what she wants to do with her life? It's just a poor comment. I think that she is totally deserving of it, and she quit playing forever. She deserves to be in the hall, and I'm glad she's in.
All right, well, this next item I was going to kind of hold off to next week because we had so much to catch up on, but there's just too much going on with it to push it off for another week. So, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about daily fantasy sports, but this house of cards is crumbling a lot quicker than I think we even thought.
Yeah.
You know, while we're on the ship, the New York State Attorney General fired a pretty big salvo saying that these sites are no longer welcome in his state, and the big ones sued, and that's not going anywhere. So FanDuel finally decided to bail out of New York and even went to the extremes of telling its players that if they try to circumvent their geography, that they may not get paid. So that's a pretty big state to crack down on, and certainly not the first, but the latest. And we're starting to see, very small, but we're starting to see some comments from players that payouts are getting slower. Which I think is a real big problem these days. You know, if it really is a commingling of funds, that's terrible after the whole tilt thing, right?
Yeah.
Certainly no evidence of that yet, but there's problems there. And we don't talk a lot about we don't like to get into rumors and stuff on the show very much, but there's a ton of chatter now that the Department of Justice is just going to come in and shut all this stuff down by the end of the year, you know, a la Black Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So it's coming close to the end. So, but the reason I brought it up today is that there is a poker tie-in. And I don't know if you – do you watch Last Week Tonight with John Oliver?
I see a lot of it. I'm one of his subscribers on YouTube. I don't have HBO, okay. But I just I follow him a lot, and I know where you're going with this, so I'll listen first.
Yeah, so, you know, I hadn't really – known too much about him. A lot of people told me I should like him and watch him, but quite frankly, the amount of TV I watch is ridiculous. So I'm trying to limit it. But I did binge watch it with a friend a couple weeks ago or months ago, and just became a huge fan. So now I'm watching it. So this last week's show, he dedicated to daily fantasy sports, right? Mm-hmm. I did a pretty good job, I think. You know, again, this is a, for the folks that are not familiar, it's a comedy show, but it's news. It's not satire. So you do get some news off it, but obviously he puts his own humorous take on it, right?
Yeah.
So the show was dedicated to it. And for the most part, it was daily fantasy sports. And then at the end, it became all about poker. And so essentially they were talking about how the two are intertwined. So they show some interviews with the DraftKings CEO, the FanDuel CEO, where he says, it's just like poker, it's just like poker. Which is funny now because DraftKings has totally divorced itself from poker.
Yeah.
One of the other, hey, whoa, poker? No, no, we never said that. and then, of course, you know, they show some of the players. And, of course, the players that have won hundreds of thousands of dollars daily fantasy sports just happen to also be poker pros in the past, right? Mm-hmm. And they show some clips of this guy playing against the Phil Ivey at the World Series. And then, of course, they had to show that DraftKings advertised during the World Series of poker. So, and they kept getting back, well, if it's not poker, why is it so tied to poker, right? So at the end, they did this really funny skit where they tried to, and they had Seth Rogen on it, where they tried to, it's like a new commercial for FanDuel where they're trying to say it's not gambling, but they couldn't not say it's not gambling, right? or that it's skill-based, but it's really not skill-based. So I was watching this. I'm kind of laughing because it's funny. I'm kind of crying because it's, you know, hitting that home a little bit too close, right?
Right.
But what I finally realized is I think because of daily fantasy sports, we have lost, as poker players, the ability to convince the general public that poker is a game of skill.
Maybe. I mean, I'm not – maybe.
I think it's always been a tough argument for us. I mean, even though we believe it and we know it's true, you know it's true, I know it's true, everybody listening knows it's true, it's a tough sell. So if you go to politics, it's not about what's right. It's what people perceive to be right.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think we've lost this perception game now. Daily fantasy sports is really hammered at home and made it nearly impossible for us too. So, and they did a good job. So, folks, if you want to go to like YouTube or whatever it is and watch the video and cheat those HBO executives out of food for their kids, watch it. It's really interesting. You know, because they keep saying it's skill based, but you know, what if the kicker gets hurt, right?
Right.
It's the same argument, you know, and you, I'm sure you've had this with friends. I know I've had this conversation with friends. I think most of our listeners are friends. When we're trying to explain to people why poker is a game of skill, we go through everything. We go through the pot odds and reading your players and counting cards and outs and, you know, tells and all this stuff, right? And it's all true. And then the dagger in our heart is when they say, so that river card, you don't know what that's going to be, do you? Well, no. And so if that card is this card, you're out of the first hand of the World Series of Poker. But if it's this card, then you could go on to win the World Series of Poker, right? Well, yeah, but.
Right.
And it's that but that's always going to haunt us, isn't it?
Yeah, because the but represents the 10%. And the we know we don't have to know what's coming to make the right call because you can fold or not. It represents the 90%. And so you're right. There's always that one bit of it, but there's one bit of that in every single thing in life.
Of course. But again, we're talking about the you don't have to go through that in that conversation with the person, right?
Right.
Once they get to that point where it's like, well, it's predominantly a game of skill, right? Now we're sounding like that used car salesman, right?
Right.
It's not used, it's pre-owned. It doesn't matter what you say after that. It's like, hey, hold on. Someone's saying something different there. That's not right.
Well, I think the other thing about John Oliver, too, is that he's coming under fire now because he I'm pretty sure he contradicts himself in there. He's trying to make it sound like it's gambling, but then he goes on to prove that it's skill without necessarily realizing he did it. He's talking about how the numbers, if you can win with an algorithm, and then all of a sudden you're realizing, yeah, you can win with an algorithm, which means that there is a way to beat the game, which right. means that it's a skill, and he doesn't understand that he's made that point. He's still trying to prove it's gambling, yet he's proved that it's a skill.
Well,
it was an odd segment.
I totally agree with you. But I guess what I would imagine, it, if you asked him at that, the argument was, and it's a pretty damning one, I think, and this is one I've been telling people to before, is that, I mean, particularly the guy that they mentioned on that they featured, which I think was part of the Real Time or Real Sports or something like that, right?
Right.
He's written a computer algorithm in a database that has every baseball player in Major League Baseball, and it can calculate odds based on wind speed at the stadium that night.
Yeah.
All right? So is that skillful? Absolutely. He's figured out how to get the maximum amount of information possible and apply that, correct? So that's skill. The problem is the rest of us. You know, the Chris Cassenses and the Scott Logg is like, oh, hey, yeah, that's going to be a good matchup tonight, that pitcher versus that hitter. And we put our money down, all of a sudden the skill's gone for us, right?
Yeah.
Because they put a graphic on there, which I've seen before, too, that, you know, 80-some percent of the fantasy daily fantasy sports is won by 1.3% of the players, right? So that's the damning argument. So, yeah, those 1.3% are beyond skillful at this game. It just makes it an unskillful game for the rest of us because of that.
Because we're not willing to put in the work that his guy has done.
Very true.
We're willing
Absolutely.
To do that in poker.
Hey, I'm not arguing that.
Right.
I'm just saying that this we're going back to the perception of the general public.
Right. So in other words, we have to make up for the ignorance of the general public to be able to tell them that things are skill. Baseball, you look at them, they say, is baseball game a skill? They'll say, yeah. Well, what about the slow roller that hits the bag and bounces over the guy that would have been a routine out? That's luck. Absolutely. He got lucky that happened. But yeah. You don't have to explain that to them because you're not gambling that way. And it's on a turn of a card. It's the rarity of the luck in baseball is the part that makes people convince it's skill. You know, oh, you got an umpire's got something in his eye, and he calls it a strike on that one ball when it's actually a ball, and it would have walked in the winning run. Instead, he's called a guy out, and it's like, well, he didn't see it clearly, but it's human error. They got lucky that the guy didn't see. So there's a billion ways to make people understand that every skill-based thing can still be luck at some point. And they just don't get it. They don't, and well, so we're under the spotlight, and that's why
right.
it's going to be
and
hard to convince
the problem
with
them. Us is that baseball's not played in a casino.
Right, exactly.
Poker is. And
right.
that's always going to be our cross to bear in this, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's really I'm not saying we get rid of that skill argument, or predominantly skill argument, we absolutely do. I think that argument has to be argued in court, right?
Mm-hmm.
If we get a couple judges to come down with judgments that say, yes, I believe it's a game of skill or predominantly a game of skill, that's awesome. That's where we need to focus. But I don't think we can use that argument in the general public anymore. I don't think they're buying it. And I don't think there's any way for us to convince them of that. So we need to come up with a new strategy. And I don't know what that is.
We taint all other sports. That's how we do it. Boxing fixed. Wrestling fake. Baseball blind umpires. Fixing in football. Steroids. Oh, all those sports suck? Good. Now let's focus on poker and the skill in poker. I know what you're saying. It is.
No, but I'm curious. I know there's a lot of listeners who probably think I'm crazy with all this, and that's fine. So I'd be happy to hear from them telling me how crazy I am. But there are folks out there that are actually buying what I'm selling right here. I'm curious. I need some help. I need to know if we don't hammer to the general public the predominantly skill argument. What argument do we give them for why we should be able to play this game, why it should expand and be regulated live and online, if they're not going to buy that argument?
Because it's fun. It's entertainment.
Well, and that was the funny part of the of the John Oliver interview with the FanDuel guy. He's like, we're an entertainment company. John was like, you know what also is an entertainment company? Casinos! I give him credit. He's a funny guy.
He is. He's funny.
He cut a little bit. But, yeah, so I'd be interested to hear from our listeners. Are we am I off my rocker here? Or if not, what can we do? Because this is important, I think.
All right, any updates? We'd like to thank KickProblem.com for becoming the first sponsor of this year's Restock the Shelves, Antiup's Food Bank Initiative with Blue Shark Optics, on January 18th at poker venues everywhere. KickProblem.com has official Restock the Shelves t-shirts for sale on its website, and will be donating all profits from their sales to animal shelters because animals need to eat too. Get details for all of our restock events, including how you can volunteer for Team Annie Up by visiting annieupmagazine.com/restock, and encourage your favorite poker room to host an event too. And it's time for us to build up our bench of possible Annie Up ambassadors. If you'd like to be one of our monthly magazine contributors and represent Annie Up in your home area, apply at annieupmagazine.com/ambassadors. We have immediate openings in Louisiana and Reno, two of our smaller markets, but just as important. So yes. If you guys are in the area and you want to write about what's going on in your area, by all means, go to our site and apply. So very look forward to seeing who's going to step up for that. Each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline, 206-424-6145, or emails us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This week's prize is 1 month of free poker strategy videos from One Hand at a Time, home of poker instructional videos online. Annie Up listeners save $30 by registering at onehandatatime.com/anteup. Comes from long listener Mark Wittig. He says, as my player points were about to expire, I decided to play a little 3-6 limit hold'em with a full kill at a Minnesota card room. A great board was on the table, and a few were hoping that the bad beat would hit on that hand. It did not, but I asked the dealer what the bad beat hand was, and she told me quad jacks beaten. I asked her if she thought that was high. She said a little, and then I asked her what was aces full was getting beat all the time, and the pot never got big, and she said yes. Do you think that quad jacks is high, and what is the highest you have heard of?
Well, you kind of mangled his joke there. Good job.
Yeah, I'm sorry. What did he say there? What? Was aces full getting beat all the time?
Beat all the time?
Yeah.
Pot not getting big?
Sorry.
I got your back, Mark.
I don't know. But
Chris just had to read the last 7 items.
You get a comma in there. It threw me off. It's like, what comma was? There's no space. I thought it was like, what? I didn't know what was being written there, so I wanted to skip over, but then I thought it might be germane to the topic, which it wasn't.
It was only germane because it was funny, and then you ruined the funny
part. Yeah, I'm sorry. I ruined the funny part. But I made it funnier by doing that, so.
Exactly. You did.
There you go.
Perfect.
I saved the show. I think quad jacks is enormously high, and I don't think I've ever seen it higher than that, to be honest. I don't remember, like, quad aces.
I could be wrong. I think I might have seen a room where it was straight flush beaten by straight flush, which is astronomical. But I could be wrong on that. But, yes, quad jacks is extremely high. Absolutely extremely high.
Yeah.
But I think what's important here is for folks to understand how promotions work and how poker managers can tinker with the promotions to get whatever effect that they desire for their room, right?
Right.
So, I mean, obviously you got a choice between high hand jackpots and bad beat jackpots. I'm always a huge fan of high hand jackpots because they're hit more often, the money is smaller, it has a better chance of getting back on the table and circulating in the poker economy and in that local poker economy. Whereas bad beat jackpots, you're talking life-changing money and no one's going to take $400,000 and, oh, all right, put it on the table in the 1-2 game, right?
Right.
They're going to take that money and buy cars and boats and it's gone from the poker economy. Obviously, if you hit it and win, that's awesome. So what managers can do with this kind of stuff is generally I think you see the high hands in rooms that are well-established and not really facing a lot of competition, and they want to keep that economy going.
Mm-hmm.
So people don't need that big billboard number to come in the room, so now you're regenerating. That's really the way to go. But if you're a smaller room and you're trying to get some traction or you're facing some competition from nearby players or places or you've just opened or whatever it is that you need to let people know, hey, we're here. The bad beat jackpot's a good way of doing it because you're going to get that big bad beat jackpot's $200,000, $400,000, $600,000, whatever. And that's really huge advertising that doesn't cost you anything because it's players' money, right?
Right.
So when you're trying to figure out what the qualifier is, you can adjust that qualifier to get that desired number that you're going for. So obviously, on the low end, I've seen like aces full of tens beaten. It's probably the lowest I've seen for a general bad beat jackpot. But,
yeah, I think I saw aces eights once. And they claimed they were the loser's bet.
Oh, there we go. Aces eights. Yeah,
but that's
So if you want to do that, that's great. But it's going to get hit a lot, so you're not going to get that huge number. But it's probably the sweet spot in between the high hand promotions and the unbeatable bad beat jackpot, right?
Right.
Where you're trying to get money back, but also big money for people. But the higher you make the qualifier, the higher that Babby jackpot number is eventually going to get. So even though it's maybe not, actually I would argue, not great at all for the players to have a quad jacks beaten or something ridiculous like that, it is going to result in a really high number that's going to be, they're going to be able to advertise, they're going to get people in. And I promise you, those tables are full when you get like a $400,000 Babby jackpot. Now, the problem is once it gets hit, people scatter like cockroaches when the light comes on.
Yeah.
And then you got to build it back up. So that's kind of the problem. But I guess generally speaking, if you are in a market with multiple poker rooms or you're visiting multiple poker rooms, I'm going to suggest it depends on what you're looking for or playing. I mean, we're all different. But I'm going to suggest you don't play in a room that has a Babby jackpot at all. And if you do play in one of the Babby jackpot, you're going to do it in one that has an easier to hit one. Otherwise, that dollar, $2, or $3 jackpot fund that comes out of every hand is going to go to someone else, particularly if you're visiting from out of town.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is a strategy that poker room managers use.
So sure, if they want to build up a big pot and get a lot of people in to see their room, they want a lot of exposure, it's a good way to do it, too, is make it almost unbeatable to get that number there. And then another way to get them to keep coming, too, is to start to lower it. You know, yeah. Then you go from quad jacks to tens and nines.
And some do force outs too, where they keep blowing it every day until it hits, which is an interesting way. Some have now done a mini bad beat. So it might be quad jacks that hit the big one, but aces full of faces will get like 10% of the bad beat jack. But that's an interesting new one that people are doing. So lots of strategies, but and I'm not saying that there are no poker managers out there that do this willy-nilly, but most of them are very intelligent and know how to manipulate these promotions to get whatever effect they want on their room.
All right. Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been, email us at podcastandy@magazine.com. We'll have Hollywood Casino Toledo Director of Poker Elliot Schechter tell you how he would have ruled. This week's prize is an upgraded membership to PokerRadius.com, poker's best social networking site and home of the Andy Up Group discussions. Comes from Carlos Herrera. We're in a bar league, no limit hold'em tournament. Button makes a minimum raise. I call from the small blind, the big blind says check, not realizing there was a raise. After the dealer told him there was a raise, he says, I'm all in. Nice. The big blind intended the check, a non-aggressive action, but when he was informed of the raise, he then changed his mind and decided to raise all in, the most aggressive action possible. There really isn't much of a floor in this game, and I didn't think it was worth arguing since it is a free roll, but I believe that since he meant to check, he should have been limited to calling the raise or folding. What would the floor say in a casino tournament?
Elliot says, because there was a raise in front of the player in the big blind, his check was not a valid bet. In this case, it is similar to a bet out of turn. The initial raise effectively changed the action in front of the big blind. The opportunity to raise was still available to him. Paying attention is an important part of the game, but not paying attention is not the equivalent of an angle shot. In a bar league, I'm going to assume that angle shots are quite uncommon. The benefit of the doubt is probably in order. If his raises after checking of his options continue, a round of beverages for the table or missing hands or a round might be in order.
Yeah, because the check is not a real move. I could say voila, and that's not a real move either. It doesn't do anything. So you have to make an actual move that affects the game and moves it along. So since he didn't really do anything that moves the game along, the option is still to raise, and he did.
Yeah,
I see no problem with that.
So we had an interesting one on the cruise that was kind of like this, and I'm probably going to mess it up because I didn't write it down and I forgot that I might talk about it. But there was Lauren, one of our longtime listeners, was on there and made an all-in move in the tournament. Unfortunately, out of order. Didn't realize it. And so another player who had he said he was going to go all in is out of order. Another player made a raise, and a player with aces actually called that raise, which allowed change the action. See, I totally missed this up.
Yeah, I was hoping we would dedicate a show to this later or something the show's already long. But
we'll back up to it. But anyhow. We'll get our facts straight. Anyway, action changes, it doesn't matter. So, right. Yes, the fact that this guy decided to check and then go all in, as bad as it looks, it's totally acceptable, and he had to pay attention.
Yeah, it wasn't a legal move, so he gets to do a legal move, and a legal move is raised. So, hey, we got a brand new O'Malley's move after a long time off. What was O'Malley thinking? Here we go.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are opening a brand new $1, $2 No Limit Hold'em Casino Cash Game. Eight players sit down, and it's split right down the middle. Four of us bought in for $200, and four of us bought in for $100 or less. We are in the MP, and it's folded to us with the Ace of Hearts, Ace of Diamonds. Wow, first hand we get pocket rockets. We don't want to fool around too much here, we bump it up to $12. It's folded around to the cutoff, who makes a quick call. The rest of the table folds. The cutoff is a younger guy wearing a hooded sweatshirt with the hood down, dark aviator sunglasses, and a baseball cap. However, that's all we have to go off this guy. He also bought in for $200. With roughly $25 in the pot, the flop seems pretty safe. The Queen of Hearts, Queen of Clubs, Four of Spades comes down. We have no information to go off, but we have a pretty strong hand. The odds of him having a queen are not all that great. We want to make him pay if he has any kind of a weird draw, which, let's be honest, there aren't many. But if we bet big enough and he comes over the top, we have no problem laying this hand down. We make it $20 to go. The cutoff thinks for a short while before cutting out four red chips and tossing them in. It's getting interesting. There's about $60 in the pot, max rake has been reached, and the turn is the 10 of spades. This is seemingly a blank, I'm pretty sure we have the best hand here. With $60 in the pot, we make it $35 to go, a little more than half the pot, leaving us with about $135 behind. Our opponent once again thinks only for a short while before announcing raise and pushing in the remainder of his chips. So, are we way ahead or way behind? Are we calling? What's the move?
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. This week's prize is a 30-minute telephone lesson and workbook from Thomas Gallagher Casino Seminars, which specializes in poker odds and math at poker911.net. And this comes from Sean, one of our frequent PokerRadius.com contributors.
Yeah.
I think it's his first, actually, he says it's his first ever submission to Hand or Situation of the Week. Now, this is a situation because I think there's an all-in pretty quickly here, but he's got a lot of verbiage here. So we're going to treat it as a Hand of the Week that's going to end us a situation. Think of it as a Ford Fusion hybrid.
Okay.
All right. He says, situation starts at a casino 1-2 no limit cash game. So he bought in for the table a minimum of $40. Wow. Hmm. And everyone else at the table has between 60 and 100 behind. I can't believe this is a 1-2.
Wow,
it's kind of like 1-1 in most places, right?
Yep.
He says, I have 60 more in my pocket, but I wanted to feel this table out before putting the whole hundy on the table. And boy, did we find out what's going on. Over the period of about a half an hour, we watched the table drunk, who looked surprisingly like Judge Reinhold from Beverly Hills Cop, buy in and bust for $40 three times. We managed to do the usual ABC poker, raising in position and c-betting to get my stack up to squiggly $65. But directly to my right is an aggressive ancient fossil who has won most of the big pots on very solid hands.
Isn't that redundant? I mean, fossils are ancient by definition.
But they're not aggressive, though.
Okay. I guess they're not really ancient by definition. I guess you could make a fossil from
some that are probably 200 million years old and some that are 400 million years old, right?
There you go. One of them's less ancient than the other, I guess. All right, go ahead.
I'm sure the two of them got together to be like, hey, this whippersnapper fossil. Right? All right, the table's now collapsed, somewhat leaving us six-handed and having the drunk move from three seats to our left to two seats to our right. Wow. And he says, good luck with that sentence on air, Scott. I think I nailed it.
You did all right.
All right, thanks. Table loops around to me on the button, and I look down at the King of Diamonds and the Ten of Diamonds.
Okay. I'll raise. It's just, it's so weird to play with $65 at a 1-2 game. You know, I'm just not sure where we're going to go with this, but I guess we would raise to 6 or 8, maybe 10. Since you only have the blinds behind you and no one else is in the hand. King 10's not really a good hand, but, I mean, it's suited and certainly a raising hand if you're on the button.
Well, it's to steal the blinds hand.
Yeah.
You don't really need to do in a cash game either, so there's a reason to not get involved, right? In a tournament, you have to steal blinds, so I would definitely be raising within a tournament. Cash game, I can do anything.
Yeah,
let him
chop.
I think it's interesting is what kind of what you're getting at is everybody's so short-stacked in this game.
Yeah.
So, I mean... normally raise to $6 would be laughed at a 1-2 game. But yep. it might be an effective raise in this game, right?
That's right. It is. That's why it's like 6, 8, 10. I really don't know what to make it. He hasn't really told us what the standard raise was either. But if they're all under 100, yeah, I mean, 6 might be. That's 10% of most of their stacks.
And then conversely, if the raise is, the normal raise is like what it normally is, like 10 or 12 bucks, that's a good chunk of our stack, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So what do we do if we get called? Now we're going to get pot committed pretty quickly, which is maybe why the saying gets to an all-in at some point. But
No spoiler alert there.
Well, I already mentioned that before.
So. I know, you're just terrible at this.
Well, I don't want to surprise anybody and get invested in going all the way to the river on this hand.
All right. So he wants him to turn the show off now is what you're saying. Anyway.
Well, no. It's a hybrid.
Keep listening. We'll make it funny.
But no, I think this part is actually an interesting situation. I've never played in a game with stacks this small.
Yeah.
And being the situation.
Yeah. I'm still going to raise, I guess, because you might get somebody who calls and then they'll make second best hand. You might get a decent amount of money off of them. And as you said so eloquently, it gets it all in at some point. So I guess it's worth it. But a lot of times I might just fold and say,
I'm thinking. If a $6 raise is effective this game, I'll put a 6 in. But I don't think I want to do my normal 10 with this hand. I would just fold and wait for something better.
Yeah.
I know it seems weird, but it's just, there's not a lot of money out there, and I don't want to get pot committed with this crappy hand.
Yep.
All right. So our hero says, I know this is not a premium hand, but it's usually far better than the drunk, and the drunk will call anything, and he has 55 behind in the low jack when see the hijack, and I want his stack. It's never ends well when you go hunting for the drunk, right?
Okay, so we're on the button, and it's all limpers. That's the thing. It limped around to us. I'm probably folding it. I was thinking it folded around us.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It
didn't limp. I thought it folded.
Yeah, no, it limped around to us, right? So
You're right.
I'm folding. I'm not raising because for a bunch of people limping in.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to have to make it
12
or 15.
Limping and folding.
Yeah, right. I'm folding.
Right, because here's the, well, you know, I might limp, but I if I had the discipline to know I had to hit it hard, and hard is better than two pair. I need that flush draw.
Right, I need a pair and a flush draw. I need top two, something like that. So I might limp, but I'm either limping or folding. I'm not raising now. I'm not.
Exactly.
There's no way I'm raising now.
Thanks for correcting that. That makes a difference in the story. All right. He says, I think I should stick to my standard, and with a bunch of pre-flop limps, I make a 10 to go into the pot of 10.
And see, that to me, it's just not enough. And on top of it, there's not that much money. You know, you only had 65, so now you got 55 behind. And if they all call, it's going to be a pot of 55. You're going to shove if you make it? That's I mean, it's just it's just not a good situation you're in.
You're pot committing yourself without even realizing it. Or at least taking away your c-bet option.
Yeah.
All right, the table folds around to the Judge Reinhold, who drunkenly says, guess I'm going to see it. As he shotguns his call. I haven't had a lot of practice saying that, drunken. As he shotguns his call all over the table, the fossil on the hijack simply calls. All right, so we got 3 to the flop, right?
Yeah, it looks like 3 to the flop. So we got 30, maybe almost 40 in the pot, considering the limpers and stuff. So maybe like 35, 40, 36 in the pot, something like that.
Right, and we put in 10, so we're down to 55, right?
Squiggly.
So,
yeah.
All right. So he wants us to discuss how bad he is. We'll wait for that.
Yeah, we've gotten some of that already, too. So.
All right, flop comes 9, 10, king, rainbow, ricky, ticky, tavy, bingo, bango, bongo, which he says is a golf game. That's where it comes from. Ricky, ticky, tavy is more fun, I think. But I'm also not saying ricky, ticky, tavy on this flop.
Nah, I know.
Not what I wanted.
Yeah, we got top two, but look at that straight draw right there.
Yep.
It's not good.
And a rainbow, so our flush is almost dead. Yeah, this is a danger. Danger, Will Robinson.
Yep.
All right. So he says, but hey, it's top two. The drunk and senior check to me.
Yeah, I'm not checking. I mean, I don't like the flop, but I'm not checking. I mean, I have a feeling I can get it all. Well, you said we're getting it all in, so. You know, half my.
We're kind of forced to get it all in.
I have like 55 left. There's like 35. If I'm going to bet what I normally would bet, which would be probably about 20 or so, that's almost half my stack. So I'm probably just shoving, which sucks because somebody's got a straight. I'm going to have to hit a king or a 10. or runner-runner if one of my diamonds is in that rainbow.
Yeah, because if you bet anything less than your stack and you get raised, are you going to fold?
Yeah, you're not going to fold. So you might as well shove.
Can't fold, you might as well shove, right?
Yeah.
Unless you want to put some ridiculous like $10 bet in, but if you're doing that, now you're just throwing that $10 away because somebody shoves on that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this is the kind of the problem with the King 10, and this is what we talked about. Is that kind of raised the 10, you almost pot committed yourself to this hand before you've seen the flop.
Yeah. And sitting down with just 40 really hurts. Even if you did build it up to squiggly 65, it's just not, or if it, what are you, squiggly 65, you said?
Yeah.
That's just, you know, it's not a lot of money to do business with. It's just not. You need more tools than that.
Yeah, I'm going to say, too, if you're sitting down at 40 in a 1-2 game, you're looking for a big hand and really shoving pre-flop with it.
Yep.
And just hope you get somebody to, oh, God, I see it. And you double up. Now I have 80. Now you can play a little bit, maybe. But 40, you're making these $10 raises. This is why this guy he's talking about has bought in 3 or 4 times. It's because they probably made 3 or 4 $10 raises, missed a flop, and got nothing to show for it.
Yep.
So, yeah, at this point, you got to shove. And fortunately, we got top two, even though we're not excited about it. So, at least you got something. You know, it's not like you totally whiffed on this board.
Yeah.
But you're all in, right?
Yeah, I'm all in.
All right. So, our hero says, I'm thinking that I want to get heads up with the drunk, and I need to get the age off his hand. So, he's an ancient fossil, a senior, and an age. Like it. But this is where I think I made a critical error. I pushed forward my entire stack of squiggly 50, calling all in quietly. I figure I have both these guys beat right now, neither of them showing much strength, and their ranges don't scream trouble.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really disagree with that, because any less of a bet you committed anyway, if they shove, and what are you going to do on the next street? So you might as well get it in now and put pressure on them. And if they have the hand, you have outs.
Right, exactly. So he says he wants us to discuss his donk betting, how he should just bet 2/3 of the pot, and I think we already discussed why you shouldn't do that. So he says, to my dismay, the drunk has a moment of sobriety and folds, while the wise old man snap calls me, declaring, I have the straight, showing his queen of clubs, jack of diamonds. Oh, God, in my haste of seeing a good flop, I didn't notice the straight possibility. No! We saw it.
Yeah.
Sorry, Sean.
Sorry, Sal. Right away.
At least I have some outs. Andy Tanner King will save me, but alas, it isn't to be after 2 more bricks. I was in too much shock to remember what the bricks were. With no redeeming anything, I go bust and buy back in for another 60. So, was there anything I could have done differently that could have let me walk away or maybe get this guy off the hand later?
You could not have gotten a straight made nut straight off the hand rainbow.
Yeah,
I mean, you could put the house down on it. He's not going to go anywhere. He's got the absolute nuts with, like, no fear of anything. What you could have done is limped and folded. Folded pre-flop, maybe limped and then played it smaller, but I don't know how you could have. Once that flop comes, your money's getting in because you don't have enough money.
Well, I mean, I guess here's the thing. If you limp pre-flop, which is what we talked about as an option, trying to hit hard, and we also said top two pair is not hitting it hard, right? But we did hit top two pair on this board, but the fact that we didn't raise, we don't have any obligation or perceived obligation to defend that pot, right? Mm. And make that c-bet. So if we did that, obviously we would have had a lot more people at this table because we didn't drive anybody out or in this game, right? Hand. A lot more people in his hand.
Right.
So we can't say for certain that it was checked around like it did. But let's, for the sake of argument, it did check around. There's no reason for us to bet there.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, Scott. I mean, if they're checking generally, a check means weakness. I know that there is the possibility
or super
of
strength.
Super
you're
strength.
Way ahead or way below.
But yeah. I just can't imagine letting a 4-card straight get there and not protect my hand. Don't forget, it does have to be queen jack to get there. It's not like it's a 1-card straight yet. So
right.
The check is generally weakness, and you'll find out your answer generally if you bet out a little bit. So if you did bet 10 after everyone limped, that might be a reasonable bet because you're looking at $10 in the pot. If you had 5 limpers and it gets to you, if you make a $10 bet and then the guy shoves on you, then you can think, oh, he check raised me all in. He's got to have this. Then you might be able to get away from it. Checking behind, I really don't. I hit top two. To me, I didn't agree with you. If I hit top two, I hit it hard. I just because it's a wet board doesn't mean I didn't hit it hard. That top two is top two. I'd get it all in with top two every time, I think. Right. Unless I'm convinced that they have a set or a straight. I mean, and that's hard to convince me when I got top two. But taking this the standpoint
but on
of
a limp pie, if we didn't raise, right, I mean, right. Queen Jack is...
But I'm going to bet it when it gets to me if nobody still bet it. What am I in the hand for then?
I mean, well, I mean, I guess if we're worried about the straight there, if you check, you got... Remember, you're thinking I'm worried about giving a free card to get a... You know, a four card straight.
Right,
there,
or a
right?
smaller pair turning a set on me. I mean, here's the deal. If we don't bet it,
well, we
and then
have
it gets there.
We have outs to get our vote, too. So.
Right, but that's a really bad way of looking at it, I think.
Well, it's a really bad hand. We should have never been in the pot anyhow. Right?
Well, you said the limp. We can limp with King 10, and now we hit it. We got to
right.
play it.
And I also said the top two is not good enough for me, and you disagree, and that's fine. That's... Lots of people probably disagree with me. But...
Yeah, I don't know who agrees with that. But. Even so, okay, let's say we do check and you want to check. And a turn comes and it's a queen. And now the guy bets out. We fold. We find out he made a straight. Everyone said in the world will say, well, it's because you let him hit it for free.
Of course.
You didn't defend the top two you hit. So, I mean.
It also assumes that we're going to get it in on the turn, too, or are going to.
Well, you know, or you're going to lose the hand. I mean, bets five, you call five.
If I lose the hand at
five.
That point, I've lost $2 because I've limped.
Yeah.
You got to think about it that way, too.
I can't hit top two and think it's not good. I can't. That's impossible to think that way.
I can look at this board and say it's not good, and I was right.
Yeah, because it was hand of the week and you knew the ending.
Well, no, but in general, I mean, I think the biggest problem, I think, is where he says, you know, hey, I didn't know it's a straight possibility. That's the biggest problem I see with a lot of players is that they get all fixated on their cards. They don't look at the board and think of what's out there. How many times have you missed a flush out there or missed a straight out there, and as soon as anybody turns over, you're like,
Let me ask you a question. Let's just change a little bit of this hand and see what your reaction is. Yeah. You have ace king, and you're on the button.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and it gets two limpers. You raise with ace king because it's a hand that you want to play. Now it's good enough. You get two callers. Flop comes ace king 10. They check to you. Are you betting? Because now you want to defend that pot because you raised? But still possible straight. Rainbow. Still a possible straight. Somebody got queen jack. They're going to check raise you. You're not checking behind because you put more money out pre-flop.
Well, because
than
I
did
raised
now.
Pre-flop.
So
if I didn't
what?
Raise pre-flop, it's different.
It's fishy. To me, if you're still hitting top two, you still want to bet that hand. You know, even if you limped with it because you said it's still just a drawing hand. Let's say you limped with it. In the same situation, you hit ace king and you didn't raise with it because you wanted to get tricky. And it came ace king 10.
Mm-hmm.
And it checks
still
you.
Get trickier again on the flop by checking.
You're still checking.
Possible?
With ace king.
Depends.
I just don't see it. I think if you're in an actual game, I don't think you're checking top two no matter what the other card is. I just can't imagine checking it unless you're really tricky, like, you know what this guy has somehow or whatever, which I don't even know how that could be possible. But to hit top two, and that's not good enough for you.
Well, it also depends on stack size. In this game, obviously, I'm betting it because there's no way I'm going to fold with, some spare change on the table
over
the place, right?
Right.
So you got to get it in at that point and just hope it's good. Now, if we're playing really deep stacked and someone can really hurt me with flop straight, then that's a different story.
Yeah, it's a different story if he's got 300 behind and you've got, 500 or 400 or something and you guys are going to get it in for 700 a pot. Yeah, then you might want to – but then you can make normal bet sizes and not be hurt.
Right, exactly. Right,
yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. Everything changes.
Yeah. Everything changes. It's just never sit down with a minimum. It's just a bad tactic. I remember when I used to play at Foxwoods a lot. There were players littered everywhere who would just buy in for 40 and wait for the first flush draw and shove. And if they doubled up, then they walked away.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that's not a way to win. That's like, what's money on red or black?
I don't necessarily agree with not buying for the minimum. I disagree with buying for the minimum when it's this small at this game. I mean, there really should be no 1-2 game anywhere that allows you to buy in for $40.
They all do, though. I mean, they almost all 1-2 games let you buy in for 40. It's crazy. Foxwoods. Where was this one? Did he tell you?
I assume it's in California.
California. Somewhere. Yeah, yeah. So, I know a lot of. Foxwoods is the biggest casino in the world. They do it for 40, and even if it's 60, even that, that's still not a lot.
No, but, I think 1-2. If you're not buying it for 100, you're buying it wrong.
Yeah, I do too.
A lot of rooms. That's the minimum. I play in, but
yeah.
You know, like a 1-3 is pretty standard.
Yeah, 1-3. Well, 1-3 is for when it's 1-3. When it's
1-2. 60-2, maybe. But even at 60 is...
60 is low.
But, if you're buying in for that, let's say you want to buy in for that, right? Maybe you only have $80. You're a new player, and you're just trying to get your feet wet. So you get two buy-ins. You got to be smart with what you're doing with that $40.
Yeah.
because you have no ammunition at that point. So, you know, you're going to play your blinds, and hopefully you get good cards in your blinds. And other than that, you know, whatever hand you decide to get in, that's going to be your hand.
Yeah.
You got to go into it thinking that. So yeah. You make a raise to 10, you've put 25% of your stack in right now. You're committed.
Yeah.
So it better be a good one.
That's right. And they all look for draws. That's
holding
and
be tight. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that either, but, you know, I'm not going to be limping my $2 hoping to hit set mine, you know, with my $40.
Yeah.
I'm going to wait for that big hand where I can go the mat and hope I double up or triple up, and you get $40. You can triple, quadruple, whatever the next.
Yeah. Quintuple.
Sextuple, right? Whatever. But so, yeah, you got to really be thinking about what you're doing if you buy in with a minimum. And
all right.
I can defend it. Just have to know how to play.
Yeah, I just think that if you had more money and more discipline, you could have saved money or whatever. You could have raised more to get this guy out. You know, the raise is not enough to get them out. It's just a tough game to play without more chips. So, all right, I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@anteupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@anteupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.